Womit sie beginnt mit dem Vorschlag oder der Empfehlung, dass wir zunächst den Entschluss fassen.
Achieve perfect and complete Buddhahood. And in order to do so, one must listen, reflect and meditate on genuine teachings. And to employ these means to accomplish that end is to develop the altruistic attitude of bodhicitta, with which Rinpoche asks us to begin.
So to pacify. Oh. Stole this word.
All the delusions in one's mind. It is necessary to meditate on the fundamental emptiness of all appearances, and in order to do this properly, it is important to hear the Madhyamaka teachings. And in this connection, Rinpoche this morning explained already the so-called Svatantrika Madhyamaka, and this afternoon will explain for us the Prasangika Madhyamaka, sometimes translated in English as the consequentialist school. In connection with the Madhyamaka teachings, the main teacher was Nagarjuna, who wrote many texts called commentaries or shastras on the Prajnaparamita. And the main text among these was called the Mula Madhyamaka Karika. This was then commented on by one of Nagarjuna's main students named Buddhapalita. But this commentary was then questioned by another student named Bhava Viveka. These two teachers then became the source of the two Madhyamaka schools under this system, namely the tradition deriving from Buddhapalita gave rise to the Prasangika system, and the teachings deriving from Bhavavikaveka gave rise to the Svatantrika system. There were other great teachers within each of these schools. Within the Svatantrika were Shantarakshita and so on, and within the Prasangika were such teachers as Chandrakirti, Shantideva, and so on. This verse says, for whoever knows that the five skandhas are like illusion, it is not possible for there to be any other skandhas and any other kind of illusion. For the one who is free of various ideas and has completely pacified these in his or her conduct, this is the supreme practice of Prajnaparamita. So Rinpoche's commentary on this was that whoever means saying for anyone or for whoever refers to the bodhisattva, either male or female, who is practicing either bodhisattva or bodhisattva, who is practicing the Prajnaparamita path, and is therefore a Mahayana practitioner. For anyone like this, the five skandhas are seen to be like an illusion in the sense that they, where do these five skandhas of the physical form and the feelings and the ideas and the emotional patterns and the consciousness, or the behavioral patterns and the consciousnesses, where do these all come from? They come from the interrelated collection of causes and conditions, and that is to say that they have no substantial existence of their own. They are a product of all of these causes and conditions and are nothing else. This is exactly what one means by illusion, something which can only exist by the power of a whole collection of changing causes and conditions is an illusion. It is nothing other than an illusion, and an illusion is nothing other than that. So when one knows this, then all of the various ideas one has about things, the ideas, for example, of things as being truly existent, fall away. Also, the various kinds of attachment to the source of labels that one puts onto things, describing them in various ways, also lose their valid referent. And this is a kind of behavior or experience or practice which completely pacifies this tendency of the mind to take these as real. Then Rinpoche added that when one can understand that the five skandhas that one has during daytime experience are illusory in the same sort of way that the five skandhas one has in dreams are illusory, this is the correct practice of the Prajnaparamita.
So, ich möchte gerne ein Zitat geben von Chandrakirti, also auch einem.
The first verse that Rinpoche gave was from the sutras as a kind of introduction before getting into the specific quotation from the Madhyamaka teachers. The next quotation is from one of the Madhyamaka teachers, from Chandrakirti, who was a the founder of the Prasangika school, in a text called the Madhyamakavatara, there is a verse which says, by seeing all things have a valid and invalid sense, things are conceived of in terms of two essences. The object of valid seeing is the precise. Invalid seeing is taught to be relative truth. So this verse presents the distinction between the two truths, the ultimate truth associated with genuine reality and the relative truth associated with apparent reality. To say, when the verse says, by seeing all things, it means all inner and outer phenomena. And the observer, or the one who is doing the seeing, can be one of two possible minds. It can be an intellect which is deluded or confused, or it can be an intellect which is not deluded. So the way of seeing things by each of these intellects would be different. The way that the deluded intellect would see things is called the apparent reality associated with relative truth. And the way that the undiluted intellect sees things is called the ultimate truth associated with genuine reality. So, since there are these two ways of seeing things, there are two truths, and what is seen by the correctly seeing or undiluted intellect is the precise, that is to say, the precise nature itself, the ultimate nature, exactly as it is. And what is seen by the deluded intellect is what is apparently true, but not really true, not really valid. So Rinpoche said that the perfect subject to relate this teaching to is the subject of our experience of happiness and suffering. The reason being that if we relate it to that, there's no danger of falling into a view of extinction. The danger in engaging in logical reasoning is that one can analyze everything away, so there seems to be nothing left, and one can fall into a nihilistic view. But if one relates the teaching here to one's own experience of happiness and suffering, then there's no danger of that, of the whole discussion becoming nihilistic, since we have these experiences of happiness and suffering, and we all know it. So that's the proper subject to relate the teaching to. And how can it be related to that? So there are these two different ways of looking at or understanding what occurs. There is the way of understanding things that the deluded intellect has, and that can be described in the following way, that whatever experience it is, whether a happy one or an experience of suffering, it seems to be real. It seems to be really occurring. And because it seems to be there, one assumes that it is real. And one attaches to it as being real. So one has the attachment to the happiness or the suffering as being a really existent thing. But this is a delusion. From which point of view is it a delusion? It is a delusion of the thoughts. It is one's own way of thinking which is deluded or incorrect. From the point of view of an undiluted intellect, what is genuinely real is the emptiness of this deluded intellect. So the way that one arrives at that understanding is by analyzing the experience, whether it be happiness or suffering, and finding out that within the experience itself there is no substantial essence. It does not exist concretely with a substantial essence of its own, is therefore, when one analyzes it with prajna, with higher intelligence, with discriminating knowledge, one discovers that suffering is the essence of the suffering is pure being, free of any conceptual elaborations. This itself is nirvana, but not understood in the sense that when one analyzes and finds the emptiness of the suffering, then that emptiness is something that itself truly exists. The Prasangikas pointed out that the emptiness also is not a thing in itself. It is not something that truly exists. And to exercise one's higher knowledge in understanding the emptiness, which is free of all conceptual elaborations, also an idea of the emptiness as existing, is to achieve a completely undiluted intellect corresponding to nirvana. In terms of a logical argument, formulated in the following terms, given all phenomena, outer as well as inner, there is a reason for saying that they have two essences or two characters, because there is a way of seeing or a way of perceiving which belongs to a deluded intellect, and there is a way of seeing which belongs to an undiluted intellect. And we're in a human world, so we experience things in the way human beings experience them, and this is in terms of the way things appear to humans. So there is this way that things appear, but it's not the whole picture, because there is also the way things really are behind the appearance. But there is a problem in connection with this, because we attach to the way things seem to be, the way that they appear to be, we attach to that as being real, and because of that we don't even see the way they really are. But if we realize the way they really are, then we would be able to clear away and correct the delusion and misunderstandings we have about in connection with the way things appear. So the statement was made that since we're humans, we have a certain way of, things have a certain way of appearing to us. Then let's take an example of how things appear to us as humans. And they can appear either as good or as bad. So in the context of our body, things can be can appear to be good when we are, for example, in a state of good health and feeling very good. In terms of our mind, it can be good when we're in a good state, we're in good spirits and feeling happy. Our state of our wealth and possessions, when that is up and we have plenty and everything we need, then that also is seen to be very good. And also in terms of our friends, the kind of retinue we have around, the kind of people we know. Everyone is friendly towards us and we get along well, so that's also good. And then at some point the whole thing changes. So then in our body we experience sickness, and in our mind we are depressed, and we lose our belongings, and our friends turn their back on us, and then the whole thing appears to be very bad. And while we are feeling good, then we attach to that, and because of the attachment we get proud, and we think, well, you know, I'm really good, I'm really a good person, in fact I'm the best. You others may not realize it yet, but I'm actually the best. And one thinks in that way, when one is experiencing things in terms of those kind of appearances. But when one is feeling, when everything turns bad and the whole way that things appear to us is negative, then we think, oh, I'm really, there's no way out of this, there's no way to get out of this situation, there's no way, no means I can use to get free of it, I'm completely surrounded in this miserable situation, and I'm the worst possible kind of being, there couldn't possibly be anybody worse than me. In either case, no matter which situation one was in, at the time one was in it, one thought that was real. But what one has to realize is that the whole situation continually changes. Both the way things appear to us change, and also our thoughts about them change. And because of this change, there is no real entity within these experiences. They are not real. If the positive experiences were real, then they would be that which they seem to be. It would be their being, it would be their very being to be that. They couldn't be anything else, so they couldn't change. Since they change, this is a sign that it was not their being to be that which they seemed to be. So at the time that one had all the positive experiences, then the kind of thoughts one were having could be measured by the length of one's neck. So the better you were feeling, the higher your neck got, and indicating the kind of thoughts that you had connected with yourself there. And also when everything turns sour, then you can measure the kind of thoughts you have by the way everything collapses, and you're like a punctured, completely punctured, and the whole life has gone out of it, and you feel terrible, like a wet rag. No, I'm sitting. And the very fact that all of one's thoughts have changed is the sign that there was no reality within those experiences. They were merely a way of appearing.
Von den zwei möglichen Arten,
possible ways of seeing the world, either with a deluded or an undeluded intellect, we as humans experience the way things appear to be, which is a delusion, and we do not see the way things really are, which would be to see them in a way free of delusion. What we have to realize is the mode of being, the way things are in reality, and in seeing that, we will see that our idea of the way things appear is namely a delusion, that the way things appear does not have the reality that we attach to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the way of meditating in the Prasangika system is described by Shantideva in a verse from the Bodhicayavatara, which says, whether the context be things or non-things, neither is found in the eyes of rational mind. Since no other possibility exists, precisely known, there is nothing to focus on. So this verse in the beginning says, whether the context be things or non-things, here the context being referred to is that of the analytical context, that is to say, when one is investigating the nature of things with the view, using the view and from the perspective of discriminating mind or discriminating intelligence, and when investigating with that one, or from the point of view of discriminating intelligence, there are no things existing with a solid entity, nor is there a category of non-things truly existing, nor can one find things or non-things taking various forms, nor can one find an existence or a non-existence of things or non-things, nor can one see them in terms of their being something that lasts and is permanent, or does not last and disappears or becomes extinct. So from the point of view of discriminating intelligence, all of these things are not found. That is to say, there is no referent for the delusion. The deluded ideas one has about, or the deluded ideas that one has in one's intellect, have no referent point. They have nothing to which to refer. So they are eliminated, since they have nothing to refer to. So this is the first part of the meditation, which involves this analytical process. And then having through the analysis, discovered this lack of entity, whether it refers to things or non-things, then one has arrived at the pure being of phenomena. And this pure being, or the natural state of phenomena, is free of elaborations. It is itself free of any, this nature itself is free of any sort of ideas of existing or non-existing, or a combination of the two, or excluding both. And through the analytical process, one has freed the intellect of all of these deluded ideas. So during the meditation, it is like pouring water into water, since both the nature that is being meditated on is free of conceptual elaborations, and the intellect meditating is free of conceptual delusions, they become inseparable. So with a non-deluded intellect, one rests naturally, naturally relaxed in pure being, which itself is free of all conceptual elaborations.
Und wie gesagt, er hat damit jetzt eine kurze Darstellung dessen, was das Prasangika
both the view and the meditation of the consequentialist or Prasangika school. If you want to investigate this more closely, then you should look in the book that Rinpoche has composed for this purpose, called the Progressive Stages of Meditation on Emptiness. And there you'll find the way of meditating described here under the fourth out of the five stages in the book. Or one could also look in the Bodhicaryavatara of Shantideva in the chapter on Prajna, or one could study the Majjhimakavatara of Chandrakirti.
So wie gesagt, jetzt hat er heute praktisch in
You may have questions and doubts about these, which you'd like to ask and you clear it up. And there will be a time provided for this, but today is, it's been a long session and somebody might be a little tired. So Rinpoche is suggesting that we have a session tomorrow morning for the questions and clearing up doubts.
So, jetzt werden wir ein bisschen meditieren.
Briefly, in the way described in the verse from Shantideva, so the way of resting is to rest with an intellect, with a mind which is free of all speculations and thoughts, and with that intellect rest in the pure being, which itself is beyond all speculation and conceptual elaborations.